Everybody stop talking now. Attention. I told you, all of my critics, I told you all that I was the greatest of all time. When I beat Sonny Liston, I told you today I'm still the greatest of all time. Never again defeat me.
Never again
say that I'm going to be defeated. Never again
make me the underdog until I'm about 50 years old.
That's right.
Then you might get me.
It is better than most. Better than most.
To the back of the end zone, and it is caught for a touchdown by Holmes.
Up the shelf, 5 seconds left in the game.
Over.
You believe it, not Holmes yet.
Goated Podcast. How are you, everybody? It's Masters Week. We are here with a legend, and we are pumped to have him. We just met a couple weeks ago at the Players in Ponte Vedra at our good friend Travis Fulton's studio, and got the pleasure to meet Keith Stewart here. We're so pumped. He's a professional handicapper, I believe. You can correct me after these intros. Professional writer for the PGA Tour, and is the only person in sport, in the sport, that is live doing a lot of this stuff. So he's with the tour, traveling, giving inside kind of information. I don't know, that's always a negative phrase, but giving the inside scoop, and is live, which you don't get. You get a lot of people handicapping and a lot of people giving their opinion, keyboard warriors from far away, and he is on site, and we're so pumped to have him. I'm pumped to learn from him. He's built an incredible career. He is a goat in the industry. Everyone we talk to is excited to, or says we should be excited to even make the acquaintance, in which we are. And we're excited to have him on the Goated Podcast. Keith, welcome.
Kevin and Chris, coming to you live from about 5 miles away from Magnolia Lane. Mm. Spent the day at
Amazing.
Augusta National today. And it's Tuesday of Masters Week. I mean, if you can't get excited for this in golf, then you probably shouldn't be in golf. So thanks for having me, boys. Let's talk and let's have some fun.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've just seen your stuff just over, and we talked about this too at Travis's event, but just the opportunity that golf has in the sports betting world. And it's really exciting. And you're at the forefront of kind of bringing that awareness of how great of a sport it can be to bet onto the public. So tell the people a little bit about kind of how you got started and what you're doing now with Read the Line.
So I'm a PGA professional by trade. So I was a club professional for many, many years. I worked at a bunch of different clubs, all in the private sector, you know, but I grew up as a kid in and around a golf course. I was a bag rat scrubbing hooks and picking the range and doing all those fun things. And I grew up in New Jersey. I'm a native New Jersey guy. And when I moved back to New Jersey, and in 2018, May of 2018, when the government made it up to the states whether or not that, you know, you could have legal sports betting within your borders. So Chris Christie, who was our governor at the time, was a big advocate for this and was one of the people that got PASPA repealed or pulled back. And PASPA said that, you know, federal was that there was no sports betting anywhere, right? So I just thought that, you know, for if people knew how much fun it was to bet on golf, right? And I took my expertise in the game, you know, I taught the game for over 12,000 hours. I worked at a club my whole life. I played golf professionally. I ran thousands and thousands of tournaments. And there was always like kind of this like underlying theme that like when the Tiger boom happened, I was like, man, this is the time to do something cool in golf. And I missed that opportunity, but I learned a lot from it, seeing some things kind of grow and succeed, like maybe the Golf Channel, and seeing some other things maybe kind of fizzle out and not really get to goated status, right? So pardon the pun.
I love it.
I'll see how many times I can get it in there.
Love
for
it.
You, right? But now fast forward to when, you know, the big Bryson era and COVID and popularity of the game kind of like reinvents itself, and, you know, Barstool and podcasts like you guys and YouTube Golf and all of these things have created just a new golf fan I looked at the ecosystem and I said, you know, man, I said, if people really understood how much fun it was to bet on golf, they would be totally into it. And I went to a Topgolf and I was like, look what these folks are doing. Look how non-traditional this approach is, right? And look how successful it is. They're getting millions of people. And as a golf professional, I always felt like the green grass, you know, industry was just too small. And certainly I wanted to have a larger voice in all of that. So I built a company called Read the Line. And I go out and I try to tell people all the time, I said, betting on golf is by far the most fun sport to bet on. They say, Keith, well, why is that? And I said, well, because there's four things. And when I go through these real quickly, you'll understand, you're going to be like, holy cow. Like, if I haven't tried this, I'm trying it. And now's a good week to do it because this is Masters, right? Yeah. You're probably in a pool or something, anything, and you're doing it. You just don't realize you're doing it. And if you and if you are trying it already, then this is all going to come full circle in your head. And you're like, no wonder why I have so much fun doing all this. And the first thing is, I call it the four-day lottery, right? So, Kevin, who are you a football fan of?
Miami Dolphins. Miami everything.
All right, so... So the Dolphins, right? They were a playoff team this year. So going into next year with Tua and Tyreek and all of that, you know, let's say they're all healthy in August and they're going to be, I don't know, a 10 to 1 to win the Super Bowl. So in August, you throw down $100, you go through the whole fall, the weather, the GM, the trade deadline, no injuries, you play good, decision-making, everything. You get to February, 7 months later, they win the Super Bowl and you get your 10 to 1. 7 months later. I mean, what?
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me? So true. Right? So I call golf the four-day lottery because if you bet Rory today in 4 days and he wins a green jacket, which is viable, versus the Dolphins trying to beat all those other teams over the course of 7 months, true. You know, Rory gets hot for 1 week, I'll pay you 10 to 1.
Yeah.
And this year we've had all these triple-digit winners. It's been great. I mean, you put $10 down on a guy that's 100 to 1, you win 1,000. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an incredible return. The second thing is props. I go back to football again. Everybody loved the Super Bowl because you could bet on the length of the national anthem, or you could bet on the coin toss. Who would score first? Will there be a safety? Well, those are called proposition bets or prop bets. Well, golf has an infinite number of those. There's 89 golfers at the 88th Masters this week. They're all going to play 18 holes the first 2 days. You can bet on every hole. You could bet on birdie or better. You could bet head-to-heads. You could bet all these things. So there's all these different props that you can get involved in depending on what you like to bet on. You know, you might like to bet placements like top fives or something, or first round leader on a Thursday and it ends on a Thursday. So the prop market makes it a lot of fun. The third thing is live betting. Everything's getting into live or in-game betting. And this is a big part of what I do. I believe I need to be on site, use my PGA expert, you know, kind of perspective and knowledge and experience. And then the third thing is to promote live betting 7 days a week, because with golf, you have this opportunity to do it. So if you want to bet the Super Bowl, it's 4 hours long.
Yeah.
You want to bet a golf tournament, it's 4 days long. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You have all this time, you know, like everyone out there, like Keith, you know, like, oh man, I always want to bet, but like, you know, like I get busy and everything. So then I end up hiding in the bathroom from my wife. And then I put my bets in there and everything. I mean, like, trust me. I know. I know.
One way
okay.
To do it.
You're listening to this and I know you're that guy. And I'm even that guy sometimes.
Sure,
I got a family at home too, you know, I mean, here's the thing though, like live betting, you got 4 days. You're not trying to do it in the middle of the game. When you're trying to do it in the middle of the game, sometimes it overtakes your enjoyment of actually watching the football game or the NBA game or something. So with golf, you could make those live bets and then actually watch the round and then do it again. And the fourth thing is, and this is really the aha moment, and this is why I built the company, is that betting on golf is the fabric of the game. If the three of us go play somewhere, we get on the first tee, we're going to go, hey, we're going to like, all right, what do you want to play for today? You want to play for a drink? You want to play for lunch? You want to play for $1? Do you want to play for $100? Do you want to play, you know, just a Nassau? Do you want to play closest to the pin? I mean, all of those things make the game a little more distracting, because since it's so hard, it takes you away from the fact that, you know, you're making bogeys or something like that.
Yeah.
So it makes it a lot more enjoyable. I mean, you and I, like the three of us don't show up at the YMCA every Wednesday night and play basketball together. And like, before we go out on the court, go, okay, we're playing this game for $5. No, you know, no one's trying to hustle anybody, but yet to get golfers to bet is such an easy thing to do. And I just wanted, in like a Topgolf sense, I wanted to pull people away from the course and kind of still do the fun things that they do on the course, but yet they could appreciate the game that they're watching, streaming, et cetera. And then, you know, so that's basically the synopsis of how I developed Read the Line and why I'm so passionate and why I'm out there on tour like tip of the spear trying to grow golf betting.
Love it.
Love it.
I've heard of most of those games. I'm not a big bettor, but no.
I guess.
When the guys met you at the Travis Fulton event, they were like, you'll love this guy. I'm like, oh, let's go. I love it. Now, I you're exactly right. It's amazing. I love in basketball and football to live bet. I like to see the team. I was a coach for a long time. I played football. I played a ton of sports. And I can tell from the vibe, from the crowd, from the players, foul trouble, all those things. But same thing in golf. And if you don't know golf, and I don't know it to the extent you know it, and if I had someone that could give those pointers and say, hey, it's soft. Like when we met with Travis, he's like, it's going to be a soft weekend. There's going to be some scores out here. And then you look at who can score, who can putt well, who can who's best tee to green and who's best approach the last couple of weeks. So there's a ton of advantages. I'm a field player. I know a ton of gamblers that pick games for a dollar. My little brothers and kid, my little brother will pick for a dollar a 12-game parlay. And I know a ton of those people, too, that are just feeling it out. They've heard the name Jordan Spieth, and they're picking Jordan Spieth. They don't even know what he did last weekend. They know it's the Masters, and they're going to take their guy Jordan. Or they're from Ireland, they take Rory. So I love it. It's huge, and it's great to have educated education in it and some stuff that's going on live as well is a huge asset for people. So I'm glad we can share this and get this out to people that listen to us fools all the time on what our feel is, or myself. What's the feel at the Masters this week? The weather, I heard, is going to be terrible Thursday. Is that correct? I thought it was going to be good this week.
So overall, the weather's going to be great.
Okay, good.
It was overcast today. Yesterday, we were not in the path of totality.
Okay.
But in true Masters form, they were passing out eclipse glasses.
Love it.
Wish I had the vendor take on that, yeah. I did not. But they were passing those out for free to everybody just to make sure they protected their eyes. The Masters is the best, yeah. But overall we are looking at a little bit of a storm system coming in on late Wednesday night into early Thursday morning, kind of moving out by noon on Thursday, maybe an inch of rain over the course of 7-8 hours from like 3 a.m. to like 11 a.m. Some wind on Thursday afternoon. And then, you know, right back into rounds 2, 3, and 4 in just like beautiful springtime conditions, which, quite honestly, we haven't had in a lot of Masters. You know, 2019, everybody loves Tiger, but like that round, you know, they played threesomes in the final round. I mean, you know, that Masters was all jammed up. Yeah. 21 with Hideki was wet, with the Scheffler one was wet. Last year was like, it was like sleeting.
Yeah.
You know, guys were hitting 240-yard drives. That one was all jammed up with weather. So if we just get this little weather event, and there's a little delay or whatever, I think overall it's going to be a fantastic Masters. And the place is playing firm and fast right now. You can see tons of bounce.
Love it.
If you are somebody that's already actively betting the Masters, the greens are already brown. Mm. So that tells you that these guys are ready to rock. And, you know, Augusta probably, you know, they probably own the weather.com app. You know what I mean?
So
like, they're
true.
So innovative and ahead of everybody. Like, they probably dried the place out extra to make it like concrete. So that way when the water comes, it feeds it just the right amount that they need of nutrients. And then they have a perfect situation going into, you know, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So I expect the, you know, the average score to be right around where they love it, which is 10 to 12 under par, and, you know, where it's been for the last 10 years there on average. So I think, you know, we've had some tough Masters as far as on a Sunday, they haven't been that close. You know, Rahm kind of overtook Brooks a year ago. Scotty has to like six putt the last hole only to win by two. Yeah. Really the Hideki Zalatoris one wasn't that close. The Tiger one was great, but that was like probably the last one with a ton of theater. DJ won like by 100 in November.
On like the softest course ever.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that we really, and you look at the top of the board of who the favorites are. There's a lot of guys that aren't playing good, but there's four or five guys that are playing good right now that are going to go battle, and this is going to be tons of fun.
I love it.
Yeah, I was getting really excited this week, just kind of thinking back on the start of the year we've had in golf and the names that are up there playing really well. And I'm just like, man, this is set up really great for an awesome Masters. Who do you think of maybe the the players that are in form right now, whether it's Wyndham Clark or Scheffler or even Rory looked pretty good last week. Who do you think a firm and fast Augusta really caters to the most? Or whose game maybe can handle that the best?
You could ask me that question if there was a deluge of rain, and I would say Scottie Scheffler. And whose game does it fit the most if it was desert conditions, Scottie Scheffler? If they move the Augusta National to the moon, I'm going to go, well, Scottie Scheffler's got the best moon boots, you know? It's tough to get around the favorite.
Yeah,
You know, that being said, the betting favorite at the Masters hasn't won since 2005, which was the chip-in year for Tiger.
Yeah.
He won over DeMarco. So it's been a long time. It's been a lot of additions since the betting favorite has been the winner. So we've got that going for us, and maybe that'll create a little bit of variety. But Scotty at 4-1 against the whole field of elite players like this, man, that's a I'm going to say it sounds like a tough pill to swallow, but it's a really small pill. You know, it's like there's not a lot of benefit to going to the 4-day lottery there. I mean, the lottery implies we're going to win some money, and you know, putting down 10 to win 40 against 88 other guys is, I don't know. That's not a recipe for success.
You know, we talked about this a bit at Travis's event, and you kind of mentioned the fact that a lot of people in sports betting, what I mean by that, consumers in sports betting, your average Joe, right, who pulls out FanDuel or whatever it is to go bet, doesn't really know how to bet, like at all, right? And they're kind of just being taken advantage of in some ways by some of these bets that these services are offering. But you said an interesting thing about like knowing when to place that bet. And, you know, we might not take Scotty right now because it's 4-1, but, you know, he might shoot 4 over on Thursday and then looks really attractive, you know, to hit and come back later in the week. Obviously how the player performs dictates what makes that decision, but what other things do you look at when you're on site and, you know, talking to, I guess, well, I don't know if you can talk to players or coaches about stuff, but like what other aspects of being at these events helps you decide, you know, whether or not to take a particular bet?
Well, I do a lot of listening. You know, players can, it's very hard for them to keep their cards close to their chest. If they're playing great, their chest is out and they're like, I'm playing great. You know, you can see the ego lead the way. And if they're playing bad, you can just tell they're very distracted and they don't want to talk about their game. you know, all those years of teaching on a range, I always have this phrase. I said, I know who's working and who's working, which means who has it working. And you can tell by their interaction with their caddy, if their coach is there, what they're doing, they're hitting balls, looking at their phone, they're very casual, and then who's working on it, which means they're like really locked into TrackMan and they're like, you know, what's going on here? So, I mean, for me, I don't necessarily have to go up to Colin Morikawa and say, hey, Colin, it looks like you're struggling. You know, I mean, I see it there live and I just tend to see it earlier than you guys see it. That's all. And that's why it's so important to me to be on site. I mean, when you think about it, you know, when's the last time you saw somebody come to you from, you know, the NBA arena handicapping event? Well, the NBA would never let anybody in. Yeah. And quite honestly, like, is there a soft spot in the floor somewhere, or LeBron doesn't play well here, or Steph doesn't like this corner? Like, what would you really say, right? Now, golf's played outdoors, and we're already talked about the weather at Augusta National. We talked about the firm, fast conditions. And I have an old saying when it comes to handicapping, because I'm an old golf pro and a coach, I view odds as sucker pins. And what I mean by that is that if I, on Monday, when the odds drop came out and I put it up in front of you guys on my phone and I said, okay, I'd say, Kevin, pick who you want to win the Masters. You'd look at it. And if you looked at the odds board, you would look at the guy versus the odds. And I bet like David Blaine doing a card trick right in front of you. I bet you, I could guess who within one or two, who you're going to guess. Yeah. Right. And I'll give you the whole screen. I'll give you like a laptop phone in front of you, right? Like I'll give you the whole betting board and I guarantee you I could pick within two in like in this field of 90, who you'd pick. And the same thing would be true for you, Chris, because the odds makers know what they're doing. They know who the conversation is around leading into the tournament. So like all of a sudden you go, oh, I like that Spieth number or something like that. Right. So I feel like odds are like sucker pins. Like they're tucked behind a bunker. I go to the odds last because they will skew your perception. I look at it as if, Kevin, you were my player and we were going to go play in the Masters. And I say, okay, well, what do we need to do in order to win here? right? What is the skill set required? Mm. Now, you may not have it, right? And that's a different part of the argument in a second, but let's just say you're like Scotty, right? What do we need to do to win here, right? Well, we're talking about Augusta National, we need to hit greens in regulation. You know, they talk about a second shot golf course, but, you know, 73% of approach shots are going to come in from 150 yards or further, right? So you need to be a good to mid to long iron player. Okay, so we're going to work on that leading into it, you know? So, but where does that come from? It comes from looking at the golf course, the design, the architecture, the terrain, you know, the layout, all of those things. So I use my agronomy and my architecture background as a golf professional, my experience in playing tournaments, and like, how would I go around this place? And you start to break down the golf course first. Hmm. Then from there, I go into my mental Rolodex and I go, okay, now I know what skills are needed. Who's good with those things? Hmm. Right? Okay. Good iron players. Oh, okay. On the PGA Tour. Well, who's really good? Tony Finau is a good approach player right now. Scottie Scheffler is a good approach player right now. Will Zalatoris is a good approach player. Okay. So now I've got a group of like maybe 8 to 12 guys in my head. All right. Next step. How do those guys play at this golf course? Is it proven that they actually are good there, or am I just guessing? And I have an old saying, like people are like, oh, they're like, oh, you guess the winner. I don't guess. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you have to, leaders make decisions. You have to make a decision. You need to run with it, you know, and you need to base that on, you know, the best information you have at the time. So now, okay. So Zalatoris is good on this golf course. Scottie Scheffler is good on this golf course. Now I will go to the data, the analytics, the strokes gained. Mm. So now like we're like four iterations into like me doing handicapping a golf course. And this is the first time I've got to the data. Because I view it as a golfer and a coach. I don't view it like, you know, on an Excel spreadsheet in my mom's basement.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm looking at the data and I say, okay, is Will actually playing good now? He's played good here before, but is he okay now? Mm. Was he injured? Like, what's going on there? So then does the data back up those other three things that I've already kind of built? And some of the data will, some of it won't. So now that 12 maybe is down to 8, maybe it's down to 6, right? And then it's like, okay, now the last thing I'm going to do is look at the odds board. And one of the six names is Scotty, and he's 4-1. I'm not betting him.
Yeah.
Right? It's just too short of a number or too small of a number.
Yeah.
So folks that are listening to this, if they're not big bettors, there's a number called the money line. You see this all the time when you're betting the winner in the golf tournament. It's a plus or minus number. If it's a minus number, that means they're favorited. So that means you're giving money to the book in order to win money. Right, which means that they think that that outcome is going to happen. What is betting? It's determining an outcome. It's picking a side and then winning the wager based upon whether or not you're wrong or right. On the plus side, that's the underdog side, but or in the case of winning, it's you against the field. So when you see something like plus 2,000, that's like the old terms of saying 20-1. Hmm. If I put $10 down, I get 200, right? So now all of a sudden I look at the odds and I say, okay, well, these guys are in my sweet spot of guys who can play well here. And they're 30-1. That's a nice return against the field of these other guys and the Scotties of the world and something like that. And then that's how I go through that process, which is a lot different than other people that really tie very directly into AI and analytics and just they run algorithms and models. I mean, I do run a model at that point where I get to the strokes gain, but a lot of times that's to back up what I've seen when I'm out there on tour.
Love it.
Makes sense. Do you ever get really surprised by kind of when you finally get to looking at those odds at what you find? Like, are there ever some just, whoa, really? They have this person that low? Or you're like, do you ever shock yourself with your process and then kind of go back and go, did I get this right? Like, is this person really coming to the top of my list here, but they're, you know, 45-1 or something?
Chris, I wish I was surprised more, especially on the good side of things, right? But let's be honest, the brokers they're very sharp.
Yeah.
And sharp is, in my world, is a term for someone that's very smart and is very good at what they do, right? Quite honestly, they are usually pretty close to on point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things where they have so much information and that's what they do all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So people are always like, man, how do they always get it right? I said, well, that's their job.
Yeah.
It's their job to get, like, if you go to get your teeth cleaned and the dentist cleans them well, you're like, well, that's his job.
Fair enough.
You know, like you have to, You have to view it as that. I know most people view it like we're against the odds makers, and you are, don't get me wrong. And we're always looking for angles in golf and everything. But like at the end of the day, like it's their job to be good at that, you know? So like you can't be overly surprised. You're like, man, they were right near the number. And then, you know, nobody knows everything. So it goes back and forth. But how many times in the NFL, you know, they come up with some line and you're like, man, oh man. And then like, it comes out of the last play of the game.
So true.
By some random occurrence too. And you're like, holy moly, yeah, what so are we doing?
It's you know, wild.
Like
every time.
How did they know that? Yeah, you know, the over-under in a college game between Boise State and, like, Puerto Rico University, right? And then it's, like, 62.5. And, like, you're sweating that thing out to, like, the last field goal. Yep. You're like, how do they even know? Yep. You know, like, it's their job to know. And that's why you want to read people like myself or, you know, do your own research and go out there. And, you know, you can go to readtheline.com, and I put all this information out there. And, you know, read it and you know, decipher it yourself. But, you know, I want to be a filter for you to help you make educated decisions. You could tail me or you could bet who I say to bet, but I also want people to get involved in this. I want them to have an emotional connection. I mean, Kevin, I don't know how much professional golf you've played or Chris yourself, but like, I'm never going to walk up 18 at Augusta. Okay. I'm not. And certainly not with I might walk up there, but not with the tournament on the line, not with the green jacket on the line. Right. But, I love John Rahm this week. If Rahm is coming up 18 and I have 13-1 on him and he needs birdie to win or he needs par to win or something like that, I am locked in.
Yep.
And there's no better evidence of this than I had 55-1 on Wyndham Clark at the Players. And everybody that goes to read the line was in that moment on their knees in their family room watching TV or wherever they were streaming it or whatever. And then we all just fell to the floor.
Yep.
You know, and we were completely gutted. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, we were connected to the game in such a way as if we were playing it ourselves. Mm. And that is so unique to the golf betting experience because we actually get to go to those courses or we get to go play those shots. Like, I don't get to throw a football like Tom Brady, right? Like, I actually get to go do these things and compete with my friends and bet with them. And it's such a valuable connection to the fun we get to have in the game. And, you know, that's why I get so excited about it for everybody and why a week like this is so enjoyable on so many levels.
Yeah, I love
so
that.
So true. Yeah, it's funny. You brought up a couple good points. First, I go right to the lines. I'm never doing that. I go right to the odds. I'm never doing that again because I'm like, this is a mistake. And then the second thing you said that I relate to is I have known to text probably in the last week that this is a bad line. They messed up. Go take this. And it's spot on. Like this is, I don't know where they come up with this. It's so good.
I mean, every once in a while, like I'll do betting content and I'll say like, golly, Wyndham Clark is the most mispriced golfer. Mm. Right. And I was saying that at the Players. I said, how can this guy be 55-1? He just went toe to toe with Scotty. And now we're going back and the guy's playing great. He's won a US Open. He's won 2 signature events. He's obviously playing very well. He shot 60 at Pebble Beach. I was there. We're like, what is happening here? Right. There's like a hurricane coming. And this guy is like playing, you know, like a pitch and putt course down the street from Augusta, you know, like he is just tearing it up.
Yeah.
And we're all like, this is unbelievable. Right. And then like we go in, Scotty's like, you know, he was 50 plus 550. He was 5.5-1 going to the Players. And Wyndham was 10X of that. I had him at 55-1. I'm like, oh man,
yeah,
I got this locked up.
Yeah,
right. And the putt goes
all the way around.
Gone, right. I was like, oh.
And it was unbelievable. We were standing, you know, greenside for that. It was just unbelievable. He fist bumped that twice at least because he thought it was in. He started it, you know.
I was standing there. I was the guy standing, just staring out into the lake looking for an alligator to swim with. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to dive right in here. I was like, oh my God, somebody.
So I have a question regarding, because you mentioned live betting at the beginning of the pod and how golf is so great for that. There's so much opportunity to live bet. How much do you personally live bet versus look at the odds before a tournament starts and take a winner?
From a content perspective, I always fill out my betting card. I diversify it very well, anywhere from tournament length, long head to heads to placements to maybe one or two props that catch my eye. And then of course a full outright card. I don't do any first round leader betting. My reason for that is that there's almost always ties, which always cuts the winner number. So, and it's super, super volatile. Mm. I mean, people have success there, but they pick like 8 guys, right? And then if they don't, you know, if they don't match that number or better, then they're actually losing money.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, they just, yeah, they're like, oh yeah, I won this guy. And I was like, well, yeah, but he was 4-1 and you picked 8 different dudes. Like, yeah. The math doesn't work.
Yeah. Like, you
know. So it's one of those things where like, I do all that pre-tournament. And then once it happens, to go back to Kevin's point earlier, and we kind of get a sense in the first 9 holes, the first day of where things are going, then I always add something every day, you know, and I will add anywhere from 2 to 3 to 4, and some will be placements, but most of the times it's head to heads or 3-ball matches. And I just keep trying to do that. And then I do follow the live markets for outrights. From a content perspective, I usually stick to, you know, more of individual bets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last year, read the line, I posted or predicted 1,166 individual bets in 2023. And of that, I had a positive 14% net return.
Nice.
So that's like 3 times of a New York Stock Exchange.
I was going to say.
S&P, yeah.
Right?
It's the S&P.
So it's very good. So my strategy might be a little vanilla, but over the course of the year, you gave me $100. Every time you gave me $100, I gave you $114 back.
Nice.
So I stick to that. And that's kind of my practices as I go through the tournament.
Love it. What's your rule on hedging? Do you have a personal rule? Do you hedge at all?
I usually don't hedge. I would be more of a cash out guy.
Okay.
So if you're sitting there with a couple holes to go and you have Sahith this weekend at 60-1 and his biggest competitor is Rahm, and you know, the majority of your investments just sitting there right in front of you, and you're going against John Rahm.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't call that hedging, but
cash out.
You know, I think
recognizing you've been beat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at the players.
I'm not a big hedger. I'm always aware of my cash out opportunity.
Nice. I've never liked hedging myself just because I feel like it takes some of the excitement out of it, you know, because it's like, I don't want to feel secure right now. I want to feel like I'm on the edge of my seat and could lose it all, you know, like, but I also want to feel like I could win it all, you know, like I want that excitement. And I feel like that's not there when I hedge, but I do know a lot of people that will utilize strategy.
And I think you have to. Well, I haven't done it. I'm talking hedging parlays, but let me ask you this. The players.
Don't do parlays.
No parlays. I have like college parlays.
That's how.
I'll hedge the last game. If the last leg is going to hit. Like, I think you always.
I want to hear the
players.
Parlay thing.
Yeah, I want to hear that too. Don't do parlays. Let's hear it.
I mean, okay. If you're going to do parlays, just start with the odds board. Okay. I think that's the principle there, right? Like, I mean, it's all right. Well, what's your success rate on one bet at a time? Right?
Mm.
So we're going to start adding more bets.
True.
And it's going to get easier. True. Right?
True.
Like, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, okay. So do either of you guys have kids?
I have 2 kids.
All right. So Kevin, do you have a son or a daughter?
Boy and a girl. Both.
Or maybe both.
Yeah.
Okay, boy and a girl, rich man's family. Great. All right. So you go to either one of your kids and you give them one task to do. What is their success rate?
One of my kids.
50-50?
Yeah, around that for the older one.
Okay. So this is a really relevant example to you. You give them 2 things to do and send them away. Does the probability of that happening go up or down?
Down.
Yeah. Down. Right? So the FanDuels of the world, they love parlays.
Yeah.
They make them look sexy as hell, right? Yeah. But at the end of the day, people don't win them. And don't get me wrong. Social media is undefeated. So they send out one, I put $1 down, I won $890,000. Whether or not that's real, I don't know.
Yeah.
But maybe it is.
So true.
That's great. But that pales in comparison to, you know, total handle spent or bet by the U.S., went up 27% year over year between 2022 and 2023, right? Just in golf alone, we went in 2022, people bet $7.5 billion with a B,
okay
on golf. And it went up to $10.1 billion on golf in 2023.
That's crazy.
Right? Yeah, it was like $97 billion overall, and that went to like $119 billion.
Man.
So, okay. So, news alert. All right. Scottie Scheffler's good at golf, and they're winning money off parlays.
Yeah.
You know? So true. And if you really want, if you really want to get good at parlays, you know, like, oh, we have a new invention for you. Same game parlays, right? So why are same game parlays so good? Because nobody wants to navigate around the app. Yeah. They don't want to go from one game to the next. True. Oh, I'm just going to start hitting props. You know what I mean? Like my wife is clicking Amazon, yeah, ordering it. So you know what I mean? Like, it's just like rapid fire, like a flea on cocaine, yeah, you know, like pop, 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 pop. Like, I mean.
It's so true. Anyway, I've seen parlays that like, you got four wide receivers all having over 100 yards on the same team. Like, it's never happened in sports. You got the same game parlay. So let me ask you this on the hedge, and I got to press on this. So the players, you have Wyndham Clark. He goes to a playoff with Scottie Scheffler. The putt goes in. He goes to a playoff with, with Scottie Scheffler. Let's say you have 10 bucks to win, what was it, 350?
550. 550, yeah.
And Scheffler hits his first one in the trees. Wyndham's down the middle. And now it's Scheffler plus, or it's 10 to 1. You don't put 20 or 25 to guarantee yourself 300. I guess that's the cash out thing, but you don't put something to hedge Scheffler on that.
So, okay, let's say you had Akshay on Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. And Denny ties him on the last hole. As soon as the odds, I was watching the odds board, and the odds flip quicker than the actual golf happens on TV. Yeah. So if you ever want a hint, right? Like, so I'm watching it, and I'm watching the odds board, and I'm kind of barely paying attention to the TV. And all of a sudden, Akshay's number goes from winning from like minus 115 to like minus 2000. I was like, what did Denny do? Oh. Now, Denny hasn't hit the wedge yet, right? I'm like, what did Denny do there? He put it in the creek? Did he scull it like in the gutter like Jordan? What happened?
Yeah.
You know, like what? What, like, next thing you know, chunk, right into water. And I was like, holy moly, right? So it, if it's a known situation where, like, last year at the Memorial, right, I had Victor going in. Mm. I did not have Denny, right? So, yes, I hedged with Denny just to make sure that I get my original investment left back. But, like, I was still full in on Victor.
For sure. So, makes sense.
I mean, there's always – I would be accused of being, again, just trying to be as thoughtful about it as I could. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
And not just like, sometimes people say hedge to me and it's like, okay, I'm going to hedge with six other guys just to make sure I win a dollar on this guy. Well, then you're not really betting.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's different levels of hedging. If it's a known quantity to what I'm dealing with and there's a really logical opportunity to hedge, I'll hedge.
Yeah. Makes sense. I had a
You can't be ignorant to just the idea that you could lose.
Yeah.
You know,
I had a bad parlay when I didn't have much money that was six bowl games. And I can remember it was Auburn and the Chick-fil-A Bowl, which was my lock at the end of the parlay. Everyone's telling me it's to win 50 grand on 50 bucks to hedge it. I'm like, well, I don't even have 25K to hedge the other team here. And I didn't hedge it. And now I still, now I have a hedge rule, but that makes sense. No. And I don't think you'll get six other guys to hedge. That's good.
And a lot of this too is, in betting, which makes it so unique and fun to each individual, is like, what is your, you know, are you risk adverse? Mm. Do you like adrenaline rushes? I mean, like, what, you know, do you bungee jump or,
you know,
like, so it, you know, it's one of those things where I think what makes it so much fun is that it could be such a personal thing to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. True.
You know, and how much you want to get engaged emotionally and connected.
So true.
To the event that you're betting on.
What do you say to the people? I mean, I'm one of those people where I'm like, the Falcons are dead to me. Like, I'm just not. I could also say, Jordan Spieth, you find people that hate him and you're like, why do you hate him? You're like, oh, I picked him last Masters and he screwed it up. Is there anything you'd say to those? Obviously, if you can't afford to bet, I don't think you should. Don't do that. Don't even get in the game if you're not in a spot to do it in the picking and gambling. But it's funny that in sports, I'll hear guys like, I can't stand that guy. I'm like, he's the nicest guy. I know him. Yeah, he cost me missed putts on 13 and 14. He lost the match on that hole-to-hole. So what do you say to that? Has it hurt the sport? Does it hurt the sport at all for people to just get driven crazy, number one? Number two, do you see lines change for the villains in sport? Like Patrick Reed. I got Patrick Reed this week. I think books know no one's going to take him. I just saw him in Miami play pretty good. So I'm taking him. And I don't want to even cheer for him because everyone, no one wants to cheer for him. But I'm taking him. Do you see lines? That?
Yeah. There's a couple questions in there.
I'll
see which ones I remember. But so there's definitely a biases, right? So you're talking about blacklisting people.
Yeah.
Well, okay. My advice to that would be it's much like life, right? If you burn bridges, you'll end up on an island.
Sure.
So unless you brought your own volleyball and you're like Tom Hanks, like good luck, right? Like, I mean, keep an open mind.
True.
Yeah.
The second thing is that there's definitely a bias. Like there's a live bias. This idea that John Rahm, the way he's been playing on LIV is the third favorite at the Masters behind Rory, the way Rory's been playing on the PGA Tour is ludicrous to me.
True.
Right? Like, but we don't like LIV or somebody doesn't like LIV
or
whatever it may be. Or, you know, America's the most powerful nation in the world. So our golfers here are better than the Spanish ones.
Yeah.
Forget the fact that Spain has won since 1980 has won 6 green jackets with 4 different players. Mm. Now the US has won the most, but we have the most players in there. Spain's won more green jackets than any other country. And last time I checked, that wasn't like a global epicenter for golf, right? But those 4 players, we all know them by heart. It's, you know, it's Seve to Ollie to Sergio down to Rombo, right? Yeah. You know, there's almost like a passing of the torch, right? And maybe that's the same problem we have with the Ryder Cup or whatever. But like, you know, like it's like we – sometimes those biases work in your favor. They know no one wants to bet on Patrick Reed because no one wants to cheer for him. You know, I mean, use Golf Facts doesn't even want to do it. But like that being said, I mean, he's a good pick this week for a long shot because the guy shows up. He top tens all the time at Augusta and he knows how to win there.
He grew up
and he's done it coming in with zero form.
Yeah. He's probably played that the most too. Last I talked to his camp. I mean, he grew up right there, didn't he? He grew up in Georgia. Or he went to school there.
Well, he went to Augusta State.
Went to school there, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he played there. After he went to Georgia and didn't get along well, whatever.
Yeah.
There's always a story with him.
I love it.
Yeah, it seems like it.
You'll like this. My buddies, I was in college the years the Tiger went on his last run, amazing run, 2005 to 2011, 12. I saw a bunch of great moments. The chip-in, saw those on the college dorm. And none of us gambled at the time that I can remember.
Well, you wouldn't have made any money on him.
True. It was a favorite, right?
Oh, God.
I bet. So that, you'll like the story. I have a college roommate, shout out Johnny, and our joke in the group chat is his wife has no idea that he gambled a couple of years ago and totally against it. And they'd watch football every Sunday. We're all talking bets, parlays, and NFL. And she's like, wait. She interrupts him while we're all like talking on a FaceTime. And he's like, babe, I thought we hated the Falcons or we hated the Eagles. And he's like, no, today we love them, babe. We love them. That's still our favorite phrase. Wait, I thought we hated the Eagles. No, today we love the Eagles. My wife pulls it every once in a while. Like, I thought you didn't like that guy. I'm like, this weekend, we love him.
Aren't you writing this down? It changes.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep a notebook on. Yes. Love it. You know, to give you kind of a, there's always these Scotty Tiger comparisons now, right?
Yeah.
And one of the greatest Tiger runs he went on was the end of 07 into 08, right? Mm. So end of 07, last 6 events, he wins 5 of them and he comes in runner-up on 1.
Mm.
Okay, so it's the last 6 events that he plays in 07, he wins 5 and comes in 2nd. So we fast forward, this is back, total stereotypical Tiger days. He's going to show up at Torrey, right? 2008 Torrey, Tiger was even money to win the tournament against a full field of 144 guys.
That's unbelievable.
He was even money. So if people are going nuts about Scotty at Houston at plus 300.
Yeah.
No. He was even money. Gets better. He wins Torrey, right? Then he goes and he wins the match play, right? So he's won 2 in a row. He's won 7 of his last 8. Now he's going to Bay Hill where he's won 100 times, right? Okay. He's minus 110.
Against the field.
To win against the field at Bay Hill.
That's a good one.
Oh, my gosh.
Of course, he wins Bay Hill. Then he loses the WGC. So he's gone 3 wins and a 5th. going into the 2008 Masters. His odds to win the 2008 Masters were plus 130.
Oh,
so you guys are goated, right? There's
goodness.
Your goat story, right?
I love
goat.
It.
Okay. He was plus 200 to win the U.S. Open. They didn't even know he had a broken leg. I mean, maybe it would have been plus 300. Yeah. People are going nuts over Scotty at plus 450 or plus 400. Tiger was plus 130 to win the 2008 Masters.
Oh, unbelievable. I don't think I've ever looked at the odds of that stretch. I know we all know the golf he played and the stories, right, and the wins, but I've never heard somebody say what the odds were. I wasn't paying attention to that.
We
got to
clip that and transcribe that.
That is unbelievable.
I mean, so he goes, he goes 11 starts there and he wins 9 times. Right? And they're all top fives. You know, everybody was going nuts last year when Scotty had 7 top fives in a row, but he didn't win, right? Mm-hmm. So let's make the Tiger comparison. Sure, we could do that. We're on the Goated podcast. We got to talk about the GOAT,
sure.
Right? Okay, we'll talk about Tiger. Tiger did 7 top fives 3 times in his career. 3 times, right? And over those 3 runs, he accumulated 11 wins, right? And then he did have a time where he did 8 top fives in a row where I think he won 5 times in that one. And then the one I just talked about where he had 11 top fives in a row and he won 9 times. What are we doing?
There's no comparison.
What are we doing?
I didn't know.
You know, I mean.
I didn't know there was such change. I didn't know there was such change to I didn't grow up watching golf or playing golf. I grew up in Miami, but I didn't know there's such change like playing in different environments. I'm hearing so much about the Masters this week, getting to know people like you guys and learning. Chris and I have known each other a couple of years, got a ton of knowledge too in the golf space, way more than me. But I'm thinking, and we're walking around LIV and people are going, oh, this is great for left to right players. This is great for, and I'm going, now I'm looking at it going, Tiger just went across the country and just played everywhere and dominated everywhere. And you're talking about other courses that don't play well for cut players. Don't play well for draw players. I'm like, this guy dominated. I don't think he sat out the courses that didn't play well for cut players. He just had that shot. He had every shot. So I'm blown away on that recently because we're walking around Miami and I'm hearing analysts talk about, hey, this is the Masters DJ one was an anomaly for his game, really, or the conditions, the wind too. And so that is amazing. We have to clip that. I'm going to repeat that again. We have to transcribe it because the last couple of years I've been seeing a ton of stats from Tiger that blow my mind, and that I think blew my mind even more. The odds.
I mean,
against the field.
There's two things that Tiger did. I mean, I spent 5 years working at Isleworth from 1998 to 2003, which is where Tiger lived.
Yeah.
And I got to know him intimately. And I mean, the two things, you know, he did Wayne Gretzky type stuff. It's just it's hard to comprehend, you know, 50 goals in 35 games. You know, that's why Wayne was the great one.
Yeah.
You know, he had 50 goals in 35 games. Yeah. You know, cause he could,
yeah.
You know, and you know, Tiger 142 cuts in a row.
Wow.
Right. And I think, golly, I lost track of this. I'll be within 1 or 2 or whatever. But Xander has the longest cut streak right now, and he's in the low 40s. But he's 100 behind Tiger.
That's crazy.
Okay. And the other one is the 6 USGA championships in a row. I mean, how hard is it to win a USGA championship? You have to go through stroke play and then all of those matches. Mm. And Tiger controlled every single one of those situations up until the last one with Steve Scott there at Pumpkin Ridge. 6 straight of those. It's crazy.
Crazy.
I mean, Tiger is you want to talk about GOAT experiences, right? So I was having a conversation with Tiger one time and I was asking him about setting goals, right? And he said, oh, you know, I did this cool thing when I was in high school. And I was like, okay, tell me about it, right? And he's like, well, I set a goal before I went into high school. I said I wanted to be under par for all of my golf matches that I played. Okay, so this 14-year-old kid thought ahead 4 years that he wanted to be under par for 4 years of 9-hole matches as a high school golfer.
Wow.
Now, nowadays this stuff happens because there's podcasts like yours and everything, and everyone's promoting all this, and everyone has a sports psychologist and nutrition coming out of birth.
Yeah.
You know, so it's much more common, but we're talking about, you know, this is Tiger thinking about this in the late 80s, you know, early 90s, mm-hmm. right? You're I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, well, okay, how did that turn out? Mm-hmm. He's like, funny you should ask. Okay, you were setting me up anyway, but how did it turn out? He's like, well, going into my senior year, I was 3 under par. And I was like, oh, I know where this is going. Yeah. Right. Like, I'm like, how deep did it go? Yeah. Right. And I was like, how'd you finish after 4 years? He goes, 39 under. He goes, I shot 36 under in all my matches, cumulative, my senior year.
Wow.
Wow. That's
ridiculous.
So what's more impressive there? The number or the fact that when he was 14, he came up with that goal. And if you want to be that level, if you want to have that level of success and you want to be able to exhibit that quality of performance, I mean, that's the way those people think.
Mm-hmm. So true.
You know, you guys get into the weeds about these types of discussions all the time. Like if there's something that interests you, go find the most successful person in that genre.
Yep.
You know, I'm trying to build a media company here and read the line. So who would I go follow, right? I follow somebody like Bob Iger, right? Read his book twice, do all of these things. Like that person ends up being a mentor to me. Like I don't need to meet the guy or whatever, but like I'm following what he does.
True.
Everything down to his mannerisms and how he treats certain situations. There's been a lot of challenges going on in the world, you know, especially in digital media and in streaming and all these different, you know, kind of so the best advice I ever got one time was like, hey, whatever you're really into, go find the best person at that or multiple people. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, you could find multiple genders because there'll be different approaches, right? Yeah. And then study those people.
Smart.
You know, like you study Napoleon or something like that, you know,
so true.
Albert Einstein. Like, why not study those people? And then in a lot of ways, they'll become great mentors to you along the way, you know? And, you know, who knows if you ever bump into one of those people. But if you did, you'd be like, hey, thank you.
Exactly. No, it's so true. We talk about goated mentality a ton and it's spot on. And I've been able to meet Larry Bird and I love his story that I share frequently that he would wake up as a 14-year-old kid, I think, 13, before he went into high school, and he would go out and shoot. He'd set his alarm and go out and shoot in the middle of the night, one or two in the morning, because the kids on the West Coast were out shooting at that time. I'm like, what are you even talking about? He's like, yeah, I would sleep five hours a night. And my dad was like, you're crazy. And he's like, well, the kids on the West Coast are going to bed now and I'll wake up before them. And I'm like, at 14? What? It's this mentality. It's crazy.
Yeah. The discipline.
Yeah.
You know, the mama mentality, the same way, you know, the stories.
Yeah. You hit it on the head too.
And that might be a bit over the top, but there's a lot of lessons to be learned in that. You know, if you want to do something and you want to be great at it, you know, and it could be something as just being a great dad,
yeah,
or a great life partner to somebody,
exactly.
You know, or a great business owner or something. You know, like
so true. The
world still seems to me like it's taking a lot of time off. You know, like people are still running around with masks on. You know, like that's kind of a metaphor, but like
true.
And you know, I think it's to me it's like savage time.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, if you want something, go get it because it's out there. And you know, the leadership of the baby boomers are turning over and the world needs new leaders.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I talk to people, I'm always like, go get it, go do it. You know,
so
I mean,
true.
I am like so tip of the spear in what I do. You know, I've been out on tour now for 2.5 years. And when I first got out there, like they didn't know what to do with me. I didn't have a chair, you know, like no, everyone's like, what do you do again, Keith? Like, what do you do? You know, like. And then when I did get a chair, it was near the bathroom in the media center. And then I graduated from there to like next to the HVAC vent, you know, like, and then now, you know, I sit with all of the journalists and everything. And they're all kind of like, wow, there's a lot of coverage on betting. I'm like, yeah, you think,
yeah.
You know, like, but you know, it's not everybody needed an iPhone when Steve Jobs started, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But thank God that he stuck to it. That's what I think.
So true. We talk about like the poisonous traits to me are laziness. You hit on that. And then selfishness. I think 99% of the world's problems are root from selfishness. And if you're selfish, most of the time you can be lazy because it's like, I want to do this. I want to do that. I don't want to do the hard things because I'm selfish. Or marriages fail, businesses fail, friendships fail because of selfishness, right? But I love that because it's spot on what we talk about frequently. The laziness, there's not many successful lazy people. And then you've brought up data a couple of times. Like there's laziness right there. You might not think you're lazy, but if you're not looking at the data and that's given to you, we're in the information age. There's so many people walking around going, oh, I wish I slept better. Well, stop eating French fries and drinking Diet Coke until 11 o'clock at night. And I bet you'll sleep better. The internet will tell you that. I wish I was in better shape. I wish I didn't have sleep, whatever. All the information is there. Go look at the data and then make hard choices and do hard things and you'll be great at it. Laziness is poisonous.
I mean, I'm no psychologist by any means, right? But I think a lot of selfishness and laziness and everything comes from insecurity. Mm. You know, people aren't comfortable in their own skin, so they kind of hide. I think the greatest gift we can give our children is self-esteem.
So true.
So I work every day to try to make sure my kids, my daughter's 14, my son is 16. I just want them to feel good about themselves. Mm. I want them to be independent. I want them to be thoughtful. I want them to be kind to others, but they're only going to do that if they actually feel good that way about themselves. True. Right. So I was past that. It was a member of mine at a club many, many years ago. And I know his name. I'm not going to say his name here, but like, you know, when he said that to me, I was like, wow, that is such a powerful thing. Mm. And I try to pass along all the time I can. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, Earl was hard on Tiger, but like he gave Tiger a ton of self-esteem.
For sure.
And, you know, and the world kind of exacerbated that problem, right? Yeah. It took it to another level. Mm-hmm. But like at the end of the day, like if you're able to do that for your kids, Kevin,
yeah,
right? Think about where they'll go. 100%. And it's something as simple, like we used to do magic shows and dance parties and lip sync contests with my kids when they were like 5 and 7 years old. And you get them comfortable doing things. Like you don't have to make them like do a PowerPoint on like the colonization of the United States. Yeah. Like, no, you make it fun, yeah. You know, and you just keep doing that and doing that. And now like when my son has to go do a presentation in high school, he's not paralyzed by the fact that he has to do public speaking. So he just walks up, he rattles it off and he's done.
So true.
You know, and that's something powerful.
Great word.
You know? And so you want to be a mentor to somebody, teach them self-esteem, mm. give them self-confidence, right? And you'll have a mentee for life.
So true. Chris, did you have something?
Well, I mean, not as profound as what you just said there. I was actually thinking when you were talking about kind of how you've moved up, you know, from the start in the media center and stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like there isn't on golf broadcasts haven't embraced like golf betting the same way that, you know, you have and are trying to get the world to kind of embrace. Mm. Like, what do you think, or what would you change about golf broadcasts regarding betting to kind of open this up a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, there's no other way for me to say this, right? That's a whole other podcast. It is. If someone's been nice enough to listen this long, we've given them a really good nugget there.
Yeah.
Of what they could pass along to others.
So true. Teaser.
The changes would be simple, but they would also be such a paradigm shift that the people that are in charge would have to understand that what those changes, you know, like they see them, but they don't see, they can't connect the dots, mm-hmm. right? And there's all this input right now. And I think probably the most important step in all of that, if the three of us were being thoughtful and we were the think tank in charge of all of this, I think maybe we should figure out like where men's professional golf is first.
Yeah.
Right.
True. Yeah.
And then we should have one product, and then we would take that one product and we would find a way to cover it in such a manner that it would, you know, it would attract people to actually watch the PGA Tour rather than to watch guys shoot 80, but be funny on YouTube playing against PGA Tour players.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, 500,000 people turn on Barstool or Good Good or Bob Does Sports or something like that and stream them, you know, and then you can't, you know, you'll get people to watch the Masters. But last week at the Valero, you know, nobody's watching Jordan hit it into the roof gutter on the clubhouse. That was pretty entertaining,
yeah.
You know, but like, you know, so like I, there's a lot of layers to that onion, Chris.
I think that's fair. And you know, you mentioned something we didn't really even get to, which is live and whether or not, you know, you handicap those events or can even bet on those events. I don't think you can.
Oh,
can
yeah.
you? Can you bet on live events?
Oh, yeah, they can.
You can in certain states. Live has not taken the time to regulate themselves
properly.
That's
what I thought.
Just,
yeah.
Just like, I mean, in order to get this to... There are a bunch of steps that need to take place, and this will get deep in the weeds, but just really quick, like the NFL needs to be regulated by every state that you bet on them in, which means they have to go to the state and say, hey, we are a legit operation, right? Whether you believe that or not, but like we are a legit operation. And then they are then sanctioned by that state, right? Like, and Liv just hasn't, they've done it in a couple states, but they haven't leaned into betting at all. And it's probably a big mistake on their part, but like, I mean, they haven't really leaned into official world golf ranking points.
True.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, my perspective on that has always been, and this could be wrong, it's just my assumption. My assumption was that they just want the ranking point like a requirement to change. Like they weren't going to fit the mold of what it, you know, of what it was to get world ranking points. They were just like, no, like respect us and give us points. You know, like this is our golf model. It should get points. You know, they didn't really do much to conform to the rules, it seems, but that's interesting.
Yeah.
I love it.
Again, Liv is, God only knows where this thing will go.
Might be another podcast too.
Yeah.
It's another podcast for sure.
Maybe to wrap things up, you know, what are some other tidbits or pieces of information you want to share with those listening who are excited to bet on the Masters this week?
We're going to release this Thursday, by the way, or Thursday morning early, 7 a.m. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you haven't seen it already, you know, Read the Line has a partnership with Golf Digest. So Golf Digest is golf's number one digital publication. And they have asked me to lead their betting content. So for the Masters on Monday, the power rankings came out and I wrote those.
Awesome.
They were packaged very nicely by the Golf Digest team. But that content is a wonderful reference to all of your listeners as they're watching as to who maybe they should bet on. And it's broken down very simply. There is some data there, like where these people are ranked, how well they've done at the Masters, what their odds might've been, you know, all of that information, how old they are. And then, you know, just a little snippet from me that says kind of gives them perspective on maybe where their season is right now. Maybe they've watched a lot of Final Four. They watched a lot of Super Bowl. You know, they're tailing all of Caitlin Clark's moves. I don't know, whatever, but like, you know, so, you know, they could go to there. So I would say something like that would be a great opportunity for them to kind of get appreciation for what I'm doing week in and week out at Read the Line. And, you know, speaking of Caitlin Clark, I cover the LPGA too. They have a major next week. Nelly Korda just won 4 events in a row. Mm. So I cover golf from a betting perspective.
Awesome.
I cover the LPGA Tour and the PGA Tour. I do it on site as a PGA expert, and I believe in live betting 7 days a week. So if you go to readtheline.com, you can subscribe for free, or you could use that as a hub for all the golf betting information you want. There'll be LPGA articles. There'll be Golf Digest articles, sporting news, PGA Tour. There's all sorts of links there to stuff. And of course, my newsletter comes out every Wednesday. When I get done with you guys, this is earlier in the week than when you're releasing this. I'll go back to the grind and I'm putting the finishing touches on this week's newsletter, who I think will win, how to diversify your card. Now, all of that is more in the premium version of the newsletter, but I'll give you a couple free outrights and certainly you'll get my narrative if you just want the free version. And, you know, I think that if you really love to watch a golf tournament, you should read one of my narratives ahead of time, because I'm looking at it from the perspective of like, what does it take to play good there? And when you read something like that and you start to watch the coverage, you're going to start to really understand how golf gets played. You'll appreciate it a lot more. And I think it'll be way more entertaining for you.
100%. I can testify to that. I started reading when we met and love it. I've learned a ton, first of all. Stayed away from some tournaments from the info because it was opposite of what I was thinking. And I've learned a ton. I'm in the space I needed to, but definitely opened my eyes to a lot. So I would check that out if you're listening for sure. And if you're lazy, you
spread
probably won't, but don't be lazy. Go look and do the research. Field bets are great, but use this great resource. And again, if you don't have the means to do this, don't bet more than you can afford to lose.
Yep.
And our inboxes are open. If you have a problem, we'll help you get help. But love it. Go check that out. I'm so pumped for this week. After you guys hear this, you're going to be even more excited, just like we are. And we're excited to have you on more, I hope, and talk through other events and how you built what you've done. The industry loves you. And I know I've talked to media people that love you as well. So that's a testament to the person you are and the man you are. So I'm grateful for you. It's awesome.
The golf's been great to me, guys. So the way I look at it, I'm just trying to be great back.
Love it.
Love it. So you mentioned readtheline.com and the newsletter. Where else can people find you, whether that's on social media, Twitter, Instagram, something like that?
Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, you know, just go at readtheline. You'll find us.
Awesome.
I mean, there's a video there every day for sure.
Nice.
You know, something, you know, I've done all sorts of fun things. You know, a couple of years of the Masters, I did a karaoke version. Well, no, I guess it'd be more like a parody version of Yellow Ledbetter by Pearl Jam. I was talking about. Yeah.
Can't wait to go find that.
Oh, yeah. There's a great one of Eminem and Stan doing Stan.
That's awesome.
And instead of Stan, I think I rhymed in there Al Ramian. You know, Al Ramian. Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
that's awesome.
I mean, if we're not having fun, what are we doing?
Exactly.
Right?
Love what you do. Well, I love it. Thanks for joining us. Everyone listening, go check out Read the Line. Enjoy the Masters. We'll be there Saturday. Hopefully get to walk with you some on Saturday and Sunday. And stay goated, everybody. Thank you for listening.